If any of you have walked by the Lenox Street Parsonage, you probably know that my work as a gardener is fledgling. Sorry. However, I do use it as an excuse, my attempts at gardening, to buy expensive home and garden magazines and look at the pictures while my gardens become weedy messes, frankly. But this year, I was very motivated to figure out how to actually become a gardener because our Vacation Bible School curriculum is our parable from last week, the parable of the sower, and we're going to be in the gardens looking at sowing and planting, and I knew that in order for the kids to be able to harvest tomatoes in August, I better get them planted at least a couple days before that. So they were planted. And I am embarrassed to admit, because I've shared all this with you, that it's only this year that I probably have the experience to truly understand this parable. And for those of you who have gardened your lifetime, or at least are less smarter about it than I am, you know what this poor farmer is challenged with as he is awakened in the morning to find out that his field of wheat has been sown with weeds. Because weeds, I have learned, you all knew this, but I'll tell you, my learning is that they are insidious. They put themselves right next to those expensive plants I got from the garden club sale. And when I went to pull them out, the weeds roots went down deep, deep and deep and deep. I had to really dig, and my plant sale roots just went and came out. And that's the challenge that this farmer is facing, because he is looking at a whole field, not just a little garden, of weeds that are insidiously wrapped around the roots of his wheat. And he actually has a double disadvantage, because not only has the wheat taken root alongside these weeds and vice versa, but this particular weed, in ancient words, was called zizania or darnel. And if you know anything about that, it looks apparently just like wheat when it sprouts. So not only is it there amongst the wheat, but it's also indistinguishable from the wheat. And then the other part of that disadvantage is this darnel is poisonous, or at least toxic. So it's diabolically, diametrically opposed to what he's trying to do in his wheat field. So his solution, his choice of the not too great choices, is to wait until the plants are fully grown and they make themselves known for their true identity. And then at that point, the farmhands can separate the wheat from the weeds, ultimately harvesting the wheat and burning the weeds. Now, this parable, interestingly, only appears in the Gospel of Matthew. Many parables appear in all the three synoptic Gospels, but not this one, and it's only one of the two that are explained. Jesus has an explanation. Jesus more frequently says that parables are meant for us to figure out. In other words, for us to prismatically turn and look at over and over again and figure out what they mean for us in our lives at that particular moment. But he provides, in this case in Matthew, an explanation for this particular parable when he's asked. And this was very important for the particular community that the Gospel of Matthew is written for. That Matthean community was one in disarray, in real ferment. It had amongst it groups of people who were really struggling to figure out how they could come together as a community. But they came from very different places and very different ways of being, especially around their faith and following God. There were the Jewish Christians, the people who had moved from their Jewish faith into following Jesus. there were traditional Jewish communities, and then there were Gentile Christians who had moved from their pagan faith into following Christ. And all three groups and a lot of others were struggling to figure out and work out the rules for being together and for being faithful. And it's into this sort of flux of community, of concern about who was doing things the right way and who was not being wheaty, that this parable is explained. The wheat are the children of God, the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of evil, and the harvest is, of course, then the end time, when the wheat is taken up by angels and the children of evil meet the same fate as the weeds. So in the midst of trying to figure out how to be a faithful community and understand how to live as children of the kingdom, as people who are trying to build up God's kingdom, Jesus tells this community one really important thing: be wheat. It's not your job to label and uproot the plants growing next to you. It's simply your job to be wheat. And for ancient farmers of Jesus' time, probably for farmers all over the world still today, it's really clear how important it is for wheat to be wheat. If a wheat field fails, truly it becomes a life or death situation for that farmer and his family and probably his community. A field of wheat represents the bread of life, truly. Jesus' words to be children of the kingdom is to grow strong, feed the community, take care of them, be the bread of life amongst those people you are sown to live with. That would have been a very clear word for that audience of that time. And it would have been just as clear why they should not be weeds, that we don't need toxicity, poison amongst us, causing anybody to be sick or die. And the explanation that Jesus offers continues for that community. The children of the kingdom have that one responsibility to be wheat. They do not have the responsibility, according to the parable, to judge or separate themselves or even eliminate weeds. That's God's domain. It's simply their job to be wheat, to provide life-giving bread for everyone around them. Now, a pastor friend of mine who loves baseball stories and thinks of them almost as important as gospel stories, as I do, shared this baseball story with me, so I have to share it with you. The first African-American baseball player in the American League was a man named Larry Doby. He also happened to have been the second African-American player in Major League Baseball and was actually the second African-American manager in Major League Baseball years later as well. He had a great career in the Negro Leagues, actually was an all-star hitter for the Black Yankees, and was recruited in Major League Baseball into the Cleveland Indians in 1947. He was known as a fabulous hitter and actually went on to have a great hitting record throughout his career. His first game, that first day at the Cleveland Indians game, when he came up to bat, was frankly a disaster. He got up to the plate, he had three pitches thrown to him, he swung at all three relatively wildly, missed each by a good foot, and was booed loudly, very loudly, off the field. He went down to the end of the bench, sat down, put his head in his hands, and sat there while the crowd continued to boo him. Now, the next batter was a second baseman, a man named Joe Gordon, and he was an all-star hitter who had always actually had a great success against this particular pitcher. Everyone knew he could hit a ball, and they were hoping and expecting for him to hit it out of the park. Joe Gordon stepped up to the plate, swung at the first three pitches wildly, missed each by a foot, struck out, went, sat down at the end of the bench next to Larry Doby, put his head in his hands. The crowd was silent. Now, this is the stuff that baseball legends and good gospel lessons, frankly, is made of. Even today, everyone asks, did he do that on purpose? Joe never spoke about the game, but even if this act by Joe Gordon was what we all hope and expect and assume that it was not something that changed the world. Frankly, it didn't even change the minds of most of the people in the stadium. It didn't necessarily eliminate prejudice in that stadium. He did not stand up and say at that moment, each and every one of you that just booed Leary, leave the stadium. You are officially uprooted. Instead, Joe was just bread. He was the bread of life for Leary at that moment. And in one act of beautiful, life-giving bread love, he made Leary feel like he had a brother. Baseball was transformed. So has been the world. But it took just that one focused, weedy moment in the life of that particular person and team. The one thing that I think is really important for us to do with Jesus' parables is not to just look at them one particular way, as important as it is, I think, for us to think about how we are wheat in our communities, here in Maplewood, in this congregation, in our work lives. But I think it's also important to take that parable, turn it prismatically, and look at it in terms of how that parable is in each of our lives. So let's change focus a little bit, switch the lens up, and think about ourselves not as wheat, but as fields, and our lives as fields. And when we do that, it becomes a little bit challenging and difficult, but I think these are realities that we all know and we just need to talk about. Because if we are the field, then we know darn well that we have had things sown into the lives of our field that are very, very good and some that are just not good at all. And when we confront this, we need to confront what that really means. But it's an important thing to look at. Bernard Scott, who's one of the writers from the Jesus Seminar, describes parables this way. Parables give us access to the way that Jesus reimagined the possibility of living, of being in the world. They are not just religious, not just about God, although they are that too. They are multifaceted reimaginings of life and of the possibilities of life. So let's look at this prism and think about what happens. We have to really confront two closely held myths. One is that no matter how hard we try to be good, wheat people, that we cannot avoid serious problems in our lives, and that we can't control and conquer any of them, or all of them, I should say, that arise. And the unadorned truth is that imperfect people live in an imperfect world where bad things do happen to good people. So when our myths fail us, those myths that we held, we need to blame somebody. We try to blame ourselves. But the message in this particular parable is that what lies beyond our control also lies beyond our responsibility. There are problems around us, but Jesus says it is not your job. The parable of the wheat is probably one of the best parables in terms of giving us a real understanding of what it means to try to get to the kingdom of God amongst the very real world that we all live in. Things happen in our world that are beyond our power to prevent and to fix, and yet we still need to deal with them. Certainly this congregation knows that now as well as it ever has. Just this summer, we have life-giving moments, weddings, expecting parents, kids who've had their faith transformed at camp, moments of true kingdom joy. And we've had moments of challenge, and we will. Funerals for loved ones, the end of careers, frightening illnesses, unemployment. All of these are the parts of our field. sown together for us to live amongst and with. The parable tells us that if we are the field, it's our job to nurture and grow that wheat, to make sure those good seeds sown in and amongst our lives grow well so that they can flourish and nurture those around us. There is a Zen prayer practice that I actually have adopted from a Jewish atheist, so it gets confusing. But anyway, it works for this parable, so I'm going to blame it on Jesus. The Zen practice is this, and I'm going to lift it up to all of you to try if this is something useful for you. It has absolutely been useful for me. Take a cup every morning and turn on the spigot. I actually try to conserve water, so when I'm watering my weeds next door, I let some of the water pour into my cup and actually overflow my cup. And my cup is my field, and in it flows the seeds of my day. And there are good and there are bad, and I just watch the water as they swirl together because they are inextricably linked and interconnected and stuck with each other as they are stuck with me and I am stuck with them in my cup. And I pray. I pray for all of the good, and I pray that the bad will not overcome me and that God will sustain me through it. And then when the cup is completely full to the brim, as are most of my days, probably most of yours too, I take the cup and I put it someplace where I can see it a few times throughout the day and continue to remember that my cup is filled all the time with good and bad, but that God is there amongst all of it. Then, here's the important part. At the end of the day, I take the cup, I pray over what my day has been, empty the cup, and say, I am done with this day, and leave it turned upside down so it doesn't get filled up, even though the phone may be ringing, anymore, and I leave it for the next day. That's our Christian hope and prayer, that we can just take each day, fill it with the good, and let the kingdom moments truly grow through and with each one of us. That's our prayer for each of us individually. It's our Christian hope. And our prayer practice in this congregation has always been one to recognize that God fills our lives with blessings. We have to endure our challenges, and God is with us through all of that. So I'd like us to turn now in prayer, and let's lift up all of those things that have given us so much joy, those kingdom moments, those Joe Gordon moments this week or this summer, and let's rejoice in them. And also, let's make sure we lift up those things that concern us, those thorns, those weeds that challenge us, and let's lift them up to God now. So are there any joys or concerns that we can share?